hoping all of you have a phrase or two or something specific that you say or do in your kind of worst moments towards yourself so that we can take those directly into an exercise, how to deal with ourselves when we are less than perfect. How we deal with ourselves when we are less than perfect was a title that the beloved Marshall Rosenberg used. It was one of the first things I heard from him when I first came into this world of nonviolent communication. And it so struck me how we tend to talk to ourselves. My first thought was, oh, my kids have got to learn this. And then, of course, I started laughing because I've got to learn this, particularly if there's any hope of my kids growing up in that world. So I have so much gratitude and respect for Marshall's work. And the handout that I've given you is really directly from what I learned from him. There's nothing original on it. That's mine. It's an exercise in empathic presence for yourself. And there's a quote by Parker Palmer that I enjoyed, so I'm going to read it. Honoring the soul will have outcomes for our work in the world. But if we want those outcomes to occur, we must approach the soul for no reason other than to honor it, making no effort to direct or demand certain outcomes. In other words, empathic presence, just being with the feelings that are coming up, and being with the certain things that we call needs sometimes in this work, being with what's important underneath the feelings, what matters to us in life, being with those essential qualities, those values, and being with without judgment or blame or any story attached to it. So let me walk you through this exercise, Marshall's exercise, on how to deal with ourselves when we're less than perfect. It's something that we call like a self-empathy exercise. And what I enjoy particularly about this one is there's a fullness to it that I want to empathize both with the needs or the things that were important to me that I was not able to satisfy in the moment. And I also want to empathize with the needs that I was trying to meet when I did what I did. When I can fully empathize with the needs that I was trying to meet in any given moment, that's when self-forgiveness starts. And that's when I can start to have compassion for myself, realizing that my motivation, my intention for doing something that I was horrified that I did or said, that the intention was really in service to something beautiful. And I remember working at a woman's prison, and one woman said, Kathleen, when you said that behind everything we say or do, that we're trying to meet a beautiful need, that was the first baby step I've ever had towards self-forgiveness. So I really honor and value this exercise. So I'm going to start at the beginning. And the very first thing is to choose a stimulus. So something that somebody said, or that you did. Usually it's a one or two liner. Take away the evaluation, the story from it. And so I'm going to give you an example. So a stimulus that just happened for me was in a close community that I'm part of. A person said something about another person who was not there, and I nodded and listened. So it seems pretty neutral. But step two is what I then said to myself about what I did. That this is just my thoughts, my thinking, my harsh critic voice. And I encourage you when you're doing this one to just let it fly. Well, here's what I said to myself. Oh, Kathleen, you don't even have the courage to be honest. You talk a good line, but you don't have any integrity. You can't even speak up now to say that you're uncomfortable talking about someone else when they're not around. What a loser. You're never going to learn. So in step three, I want to go into mourning. And here I want to make a distinction between mourning and blaming. Blaming is when I stay with the paradigm that somebody's right and somebody's wrong. And I either blame myself harshly that somehow I'm not good enough or I'm not bad, or I try to blame somebody else that they're a jerk. In that place of blame, it's hard to get learning and connection and healing. So I want to choose something that I call mourning instead. And mourning is when I get really, really clear of what those underlying needs were, what the thing is that I value. And then I can go into some deep regret and mourning that what I was hoping for, I wasn't able to obtain. And when I'm in that place, it can be a very deep pain, but it really connected to the life of what's important underneath it. And in that place, I can learn to make different choices. So step three is mourning. So I first want to look at the needs that were not satisfied by what I did. And so, again, what I did when somebody spoke about somebody else is I just nodded and listened. And the needs that were not satisfied was protection and care for the other person who was being spoken about. I wasn't satisfying my need for integrity to really say what was truly going on for me. And I wasn't able to influence the community to increase the awareness of how we care for each other. And I didn't have the level of self-expression I wanted. And I also prevented myself from being known and seen in that community for really who I was. And if I just sit with the feelings that come up for that, there's a sadness, there's a discouragement that comes up. Yeah, a longing, kind of an ache to think that maybe someone wasn't held with care and I didn't step in and do anything about it because I really want everyone seen for their humanity. And then I want to look at the needs that I was trying to satisfy by doing what I did, by just nodding and listening. I think I really wanted connection with the speaker. And I wanted the speaker to experience presence and belonging and safety, to be able to know that there's a place that the speaker can express and to be seen for their intentions. And I also really wanted harmony, and I wasn't trusting that if I spoke up, the speaker would have a sense of being seen and known. I didn't trust that I could have the sort of connection I wanted. I didn't trust I could maintain harmony. So I made my choice motivated by those needs. And when I think about that, I feel a lot more compassion toward myself, realizing that those were beautiful needs I was trying to meet. Step number four is I want to move into the learning phase. So what could I have done differently? I could have given empathy to the speaker for the speaker's needs behind speaking about someone when they weren't there. And I did that, and that part felt good. But then what I didn't do, which I could do next time, is I could ask if he or she has a space to hear me about what's coming up for me. And I could have talked about my discomfort not knowing really how to care for someone when they're not present to care for themselves. And I could have made a request to the speaker if when they hear me say I'm uncomfortable, if they were hearing blame from me because I'm really wanting just more connection and understanding. I could have made a request to hear if the speaker would have been willing to tell me what I could have said when I started to feel uncomfortable that would let them know that I still cared about them. And I also wanted to protect the person that they were speaking about. I could have had an exploration with that person. And then sometimes the fifth thing that I have on the handout is a sense of speed learning by keeping a jackal book. So these things come up for me several times during the day. So I might just note down a stimulus or situation where I did something that I didn't feel great about. And then later, I could go back and journal, you know, what were the needs that were unmet? What were the needs I was trying to meet? My good reasons for doing it. And then learn about what alternatives I could come up next time to try to meet both needs. The sixth thing is self-empathy, is seeing truth of what the needs are that are motivating our actions. Not looking at the world through rose-colored glasses. Just being honest with myself so I can really learn in ways that help me find a different strategy next time.